Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
So let me introduce to you the one and only Billy Shears!
Oh, so close, Paul. So, just so close. Next week, folks on the staff, let's give him cards with the words printed a little bit bigger, okay? Just a thought. Ladies and gentlemen, once again from the center of what was once one of the world's great empires, London, England. And I was all week long this past week in Bath. So, boy, are my fingers wrinkled. You know, it is a beautiful city. It's a lovely city in the west of England, southwest of England, site of ancient Roman baths, hence the name. Yes, it's an educational broadcast. So what? And ladies and gentlemen, where would you look to find ingredients that would ensure that your baby shampoo could, in fact, produce no more tears? Well, how about a big vat of formaldehyde? Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo, in fact, does contain formaldehyde, according to Bloomberg News. Deemed a probable human carcinogen is formaldehyde. The U.S. government says that, or said that before it was shut down. Formaldehyde is one of 164 potentially harmful chemicals targeted under a new California law, imposing stricter safety standards on a range of products made by such trusted companies as Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble. Any company with an ampersand in their name, watch out. That's secret code for formaldehyde. The law also takes aim at untreated mineral oils in lotions and at acetaldehyde, which can irritate the skin and just irritates me personally, and is used in perfume. Well, that would explain it. Regulators are responding to pressure from consumer advocates who say U.S. efforts to ensure the safety of cosmetics and household cleaners lag behind Europe's. Well, what are they trying to do? Make the United States like just another Europe? That's what the Tea Party is all about, is to try to prevent that. Sorry, excuse me. I got upset. I got all head up. California's approach reflects growing concern over the cumulative effects of chemicals because consumers use multiple products. Did you know that? I don't think the chemistry industry knew that. We just thought they used one product and it was all fine. The law phases in over a couple of years. Companies are already adjusting. Walmart stores says by 2015 it will require suppliers to phase out 10 as yet unidentified chemicals from cleaners, makeup, and other personal care products. I guess it's your choice which ones you want to phase out if they've unidentified them. Johnson & Johnson plans to make its baby shampoo formaldehyde-free by year end. Doesn't say what they'll use instead. Corexit? That was the oil dispersant used in the Gulf, for those of you who are not keeping track. And to eliminate other potentially harmful components from its lineup by 2015. Only 2 years to still use the potentially harmful components, ladies and gentlemen. So rush to your stores and stock up as our products and policies evolve. When a PR statement includes in its first clause the word evolve, you know that trouble lies ahead. And you know it wasn't written in Texas. As our products and policies evolve, they reflect the latest science, new regulations, and just as importantly, consumer concerns. That's Johnson & Johnson spokeswoman Carol Goodrich from where the public relations rubber hits the road. So maybe there'll be tears. Who knows? Maybe it was the formaldehyde after all. And ladies and gentlemen, just one more note here at the beginning of the program. I was invited to walk around the entirety of Leicester Square earlier this evening to access this fine broadcasting facility because there's a red carpet premiere. And, you know, when they do that, they fence off all public space and assign it to a private company, in this case a film company, for their benefit. And I'm happy to oblige, of course. But apropos, this from today's Sunday Times of London, for which, by the way, Rupert, I did pay.
Of course, one enjoys
a feeling of power.
Yeah, but the money's good, too. Hollywood studios, says the paper, are recruiting academics as history assassins to help them undermine rival studios' films that may be contending later in the year for an Oscar. For example, an early favorite, The Butler, in which Forrest Whitaker plays a manservant to 8 U.S. presidents, has been lambasted not just for anachronisms, but in overplaying the sense of outrage. The Butler's mother was not raped, his father was not murdered by racists, and his son did not die in the Vietnam War. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you enjoy the movie? Critics have also questioned the highly regarded 12 Years a Slave over whether the original autobiography may have been exaggerated by its ghostwriter to suit anti-slavery sentiments in 1850s New York. And the picture, whose red carpet occasioned by long, rain-splattered walk around Leicester Square, Captain Phillips, has been shaken, it says in the London Times, by revelations that the crew are suing the shipowner, saying Phillips took unnecessary risks. The Harvard professor who was asked to see the latest films wants to remain anonymous. I guess he wants to work in Hollywood again. Hello. Welcome to the show.
I took a trip on a train and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream, moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam the same old dream. And every stop that we made, oh, I thought about you. And when I pulled down the shade, then I really felt blue. I peeked through the crack and looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you. There were two or three cars parked under the stars, winding stream, moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam the same old dream. And then I peeked through the crack and I looked at that track, one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you.
From just off the red carpet in Leicester Square in London, England, from the London Millennium Showdome. They don't use that term anymore here, do they? I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now,
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Well, in the parade of interviewees beginning their sentences with the word so, last time I featured a female interviewee. According to Twitter, her feathers were ruffled because she thought I was picking on her for being, among other things, a female, according to what she was saying. So this week, again, a woman interviewee enters the SoFest with a new locution, introducing the Yeah So. And not picking on you for any other reason than you're saying Yeah So. So, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy sentences, answers, if you will, beginning with the word so or with yeah, so.
So this study, I have to say, it's a little bit complicated, but explain to us overall how it worked.
Yeah, so we ran an experiment with a large group of U.S. participants, about 2,500 people.
Can you describe the difference between the two?
So in the direct report, we're asking these so-called sensitive questions directly to those participants.
What were your findings between these two groups?
Yeah, so we see underreporting of non-heterosexual identity when asked directly.
Can you talk a little bit about what that is and what you found in this study?
Yeah, so this is a really well-established concept from psychology.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right.
It's a well-established concept in psychology that you don't need two handles to start a sentence. Yeah, so. Well, yeah, so. While you're at it. So, and then, of course, the fantastically complex, so, yeah, while, well, so. And then you don't even need a sentence. With a B like that, you don't even need an A. Ladies and gentlemen, news of Nice Corp. And you know who they are. They're our friends at the News Corporation, the former News Corporation. Now, still a News Corporation. And it's... We call it the Nice Corp because it's nice people doing nice things. This is from a magazine called Capital New York. Said he's so nice, they capitalized it. During the height of News Corporation's phone hacking drama in 2011, journalists at the Wall Street Journal grappled with efforts from higher-ups to muzzle their coverage of the scandal. This according to a new book by David Folkenflik. You may recognize his name. We'll mention that in a moment. Reporters and editors at the Journal who were assigned to cover the allegations of phone hacking and other illegal activity at News International, News Corp's British newspaper division, quote, told colleagues of stories that were blocked, stripped of damning detail or context, or just held up in bureaucratic purgatory. This is according to Folkenflik. In the most troubling instance, if you're the kind of person that thinks interfering with the news is troubling. Me, I think it's nice. In the most troubling instance, Robert Thompson, now the CEO of Nice Corp, tried to prevent the publication of a damaging journal article when he was managing editor of the Journal, according to Folkenflik. In the summer of 2011, of course, it was revealed that journalists at the tabloid News of the World had accessed the voicemails of a 13-year-old girl. And a team of Journal reporters was working on a scoop about discrepancies they discovered between different versions of an article about the girl. An early version of the article included detailed quotes from voicemail messages, according to Folkenflik, and the Journal reporters had also learned that the British tabloid editor had deployed a team of 9 journalists based on a voicemail obtained from the girl's cell phone. This contradicted the company's earlier claims that the phone hacking was limited to a single reporter. Thompson tried to kill the story several different times, Folkenflik reports. As a fallback strategy, several reporters believe Thompson was intentionally trying to set impossible standards so the story would not see the light of day. It eventually was published. The revelations about the altered News of the World article were buried in paragraph 9. The process was so painful, said one of the journalists who worked on the report. If we hadn't fought, Robert would have been happy for us not to run it at all. A News Corporation spokesperson declined to comment because... commenting is not nice, and it is Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Folkenflik, ladies and gentlemen, is media correspondent for a little thing called NPR. He might next work on a book about how NPR missed the story about what caused the flooding of New Orleans. If he's on a roll. And... on a related subject.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide, to beautify our countryside. We offer you our hand. Let us try.
Oh, there's some good trying today, ladies and gentlemen, from the United States Army Corps of Engineers. While the government was nearing a shutdown and bracing for a default, a $1.2 billion NSA supercomputer in Utah, built to ingest all that data they're collecting, reportedly was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to replace fried electrical equipment. Oh, you know who was in charge of this. NSA officials masked the woes in Utah at a time when the agency was already facing a lot of controversy about the Ed Snowden revelations. As recently as June 19th, agency officials told NextGov.com, where this report comes from, that the Spy Center, 15 times the size of MetLife Stadium, would be operational by October 1st. Hey, that's the same date when healthcare.gov went operational. I guess it's a new definition of operational at work now. That month, NextGov reports, NSA spokeswoman said in the email, the exterior is done. It's now time for IT guts to be installed. But behind the security perimeter, persistent electrical surges apparently sparked explosions and a year-long delay that NSA officials did not disclose. Earlier this week, the Wall Street Journal, owned by Rupert Murdoch, reported there have been 10 meltdowns during the past 13 months that have prevented NSA from running computers. The construction, according to Harvey Davis, a top agency official at the NSA, was undertaken by the Corps of Engineers and has been a, quote, open project. The military construction process by design is a very, very transparent process, he said. It's a public discourse. By its nature, military construction is a very, very open process, he repeated. This week, NSA and the Army Corps of Engineers officials declined to answer questions about the failure to disclose that there was a delay. Norbert Suter, the Corps Chief of Construction Operations, said power connectivity remains incomplete. The final commissioning of the entire electrical system is still ongoing. The final commissioning is still ongoing is a delightful way of saying we haven't started. It ain't ready. He continues, though. Quote, the Corps is ensuring it functions as required and that it will be completely reliable prior to releasing the project to the customer. Of course, the customer in this case is the NSA. And he declined to address cost overruns because what else is new? Suter did acknowledge there has been a series of glitches. Glitches! It's the word of the year. During the testing and commissioning of the Utah Data Center, he said problems were discovered with certain parts of the electrical system. Issues such as these can arise in any project. That's right. My toaster explodes daily. And are the reason the Corps tests and reviews every aspect of any project prior to releasing it to the customer. You know, like the levees in New Orleans, Norbert? More Corps professionals were summoned and the source of the problems was discovered, Suter said, without elaborating further. The team also discovered ventilation troubles. In order to function, of course, data centers need an air management system to cool equipment and remove waste heat. An airflow issue was discovered with the generators. The contractor is correcting the problem. The final tab for the ultimate customer, the taxpayer, is a question mark. The Corps is making preparations to release it to the customer. The customer, ladies and gentlemen. The Corps is just another business, you see. And the this might not have anything to do. No, it doesn't have anything to do with the Corps of Engineers. So we'll move to that at another moment, ladies and gentlemen. Editing on the fly, as we do here on the radio for your listening pleasure. But that is news of the Army Corps of Engineers. Always asking one thing: just let us try. Just or are they daring us? Just let us try. Go ahead. And now, news from outside the bubble. This from the Guardian newspaper. A United Nations investigation has so far identified 33 drone strikes around the world, U.S. drone strikes, that have resulted in civilian casualties and thus may have violated international humanitarian law. That's cute. The report by the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Counterterrorism, Ben Emerson, who is a British lawyer, calls on the United States to declassify information about operations coordinated by the CIA. Yep, that's going to happen. And clarify its position on the legality of unmanned aerial attacks. That'll happen too, Ben. Published ahead of a debate on the use of drone aircraft at the UN General Assembly this coming week, the 22-page document examines incidents in Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Pakistan, and Gaza. A related report was released earlier this week by Professor Christoph Haines, the UN's special rapporteur on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions, which warned that the drone technology was being misused as a form of global policing. But Emerson, the author of the Human Rights Report, traveled to Islamabad for his investigation, says the Pakistan Ministry of Foreign Affairs has records of as many as 330 drone strikes in the country's northwestern tribal areas since 2004. Up to 2,200 people have been killed, of whom at least 400 were civilians. In Yemen, Emerson's report said as many as 58 civilians are thought to have been killed in attacks by drones. While the fact that civilians have been killed or injured does not necessarily point to a violation of international humanitarian law, he says, it undoubtedly raises issues of accountability and transparency, unquote. Is he kidding? This is the most transparent administration in history. Doesn't he read? News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this program, and now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This from the Pentagon's inspector general. That's always good news when the Pentagon is investigating itself in some way or another. Four times in the past 5 years, the Pentagon's inspector general has found that the Boeing company collected excessive or unjustified payments on U.S. defense contracts. We know why we're here.
We know why we're here.
Around the globe, the people of Boeing are working together to support and protect all who serve.
That's why we're here.
Excessive or unjustified payments on U.S. defense contracts might be a better... version of that. In the latest of four audits in 2008, the Pentagon's inspector general says Boeing charged the U.S. Army for new helicopter parts while installing used ones. Well, that's why we're here. Just to sell you used ones and call them new. They're like new. Boeing significantly overstated estimates of new components needed for Chinook helicopters and primarily installed used parts instead under a $4.5 billion contract awarded in 2008, according to the report, labeled for official use only, but obtained by Bloomberg News. Used parts were allowed in some circumstances. Hey, happy flying, boys. Support the troops and all. The report found that the company overcharged the U.S. Army by as much as $16 million by exaggerating how many new ones were required while installing refurbished equipment. Who furbished them in the first place? That's what I want to know. Can we find out? The report also faults defense agencies and military services for lax negotiations and contract management. The bottom line is that using reworked parts rather than new parts increased Boeing's profit, says a spokeswoman for the inspector general. The Army paid Boeing for parts that were proposed but never installed and is paying for additional parts that they do not need and may not use, said a spokeswoman for the inspector general. That's why we're here. Boeing is the number two federal contractor after Lockheed Martin. While Boeing recognizes the important work that the Department of Defense Inspector General performs, it disagrees with the IG's conclusion, says Damian Mills, a company spokesman. We believe we were fully compliant with all government contract policies, and we provided evidence of that throughout this audit. Unquote. The four audits since 2008, which involved different contracts and circumstances, all found that the Army and Pentagon need to bolster their ability to go toe-to-toe with Boeing, or bow-to-bow with towing, in complex negotiations. This according to Henry Kleinknecht, the Inspector General's former Director for Pricing and Logistics, who managed the Boeing audits until he had enough and retired. Quote, unfortunately, the Army does not have a cost-price analysis group. Really? That's interesting. After all these wars and stuff? You'd think, wouldn't you? The Army does not have a cost-price analysis group, says Kleinecht, much less an experienced one. I'd say get a rookie one. And, you know, work them in slowly, real slowly. Government and military contracting officials don't have the technical expertise in a lot of these complex areas to go in and figure out, he says, what the problems are. Yeah, they know why they're here. News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, the shutdown is over. The debt thing didn't happen. The kabuki that transfixed the Washington, New York media way over the last three, four, five, how many months? And it'll start up again right after the first of the year. Look forward to that. Can we? I know that the Congress likes to stop the clock on occasions when they're trying to beat a deadline. Can we stop the calendar? Because then that would mean that they wouldn't have. Anyway, the universal verdict is that the president won by standing firm. New idea. And the right wing of the Republican Party, the so-called Tea Party wing, and its main enunciators, main vocal supporters or characters, such as Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, are widely believed by the punditocracy to have lost and failed. And so begins another round of perhaps actual talks. There is a Senate House Conference Committee on the budget already meeting, and there may in fact be talks between, now that the crisis has been resolved, between the president and the Speaker of the House, John Boehner. We'll look into that possibility moments from now here on the show.
Yeah. Father Knows Best.
Oh, hey, sweetheart, how was school?
Oh, you know, very school-like. Oh, God, what's this, another state dinner? Who do I have to be nice to tonight, Silvio Berlusconi?
Thank goodness he's out of office. This week. No, your father's having a big shot from the legislative branch over. Kind of a way of building bridges.
You mean the ones they just burned?
You could say that.
Well, they're not trying very hard to build bridges. That's not the Roosevelt China, is it, Manuel?
No, Miss Kitten, you're right. That's the George Bush China.
Well, we do have to play it safe. Just in case tempers flare, we don't want a 100-year-old salad plate tossed in anger.
But it's still valuable, right?
Not really. In one of our little talks, Laura bragged to me that she ordered it from Overstock.com.
So, do I need to impress this big shot with my brains or my charm?
It's the Speaker of the House, dear. So I just depend on you to make sure his wine glass is always filled. That'll impress him plenty.
Okay, homework time, I guess.
See you promptly at 7. Oh, and, Manuel?
Yes, Mrs.
I think the extra large wine glasses. Everything to your liking so far, Mr. Speaker?
Delicious. A little tougher than the steak and eggs at Pete's Diner, but mighty good.
This is free-range, grass-fed, dry-aged filet, isn't it, darling?
That's all we buy.
I doubt Pete's Diner gets any of that.
I doubt it, too. We bought up the whole herd.
And these are haricot vert that we grew in the White House garden.
Very impressive. Taste almost as good as real string beans.
So, before the souffle's ready, John, I thought we might start things off by owning up to a few hard truths.
Mrs. Obama, would you be so kind as to tell your husband that I'm not going to be speaking to him directly until I hear an apology for some of the rudeness and insults directed at me personally by his allies in the other house?
Kitten, that's your cue. Barack, John thinks you owe him an apology.
Well, you know, I'd appreciate it if the First Lady would tell him that I won, he lost. And the only thing I'm sorry about is that this Chardonnay isn't the 2009.
Mr. Speaker, the President doesn't think it's appropriate to apologize.
Wow, Mom. Nice translation.
Well, Mrs. Obama, I think you should remind your husband that shall we say, more troublesome members wouldn't have even started this mess if they hadn't been led to believe by much of his first term that he could be rolled more easily than a Guatemalan taco.
He says
I heard him. You know, I think maybe Kitten here should let the Speaker know that the only reason his more troublesome members started this is because they're nuts. And that the definition of insanity is not standing up to crazy people like the bloggers and the talk show hosts.
Mr. Speaker, I...
Aren't you supposed to be pouring wine? You know, Mrs. Obama, I think that perhaps the President needs to be reminded that the definition of insanity is repeated in dozens of cliches, is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. Like, say, refusing to sit down and have a conversation.
Barack,
will you stay out of this? Kitten, will you please tell the Speaker that we are, in fact, sitting down, and if this isn't a conversation, then Ted Cruz isn't the craziest thing to come out of Texas since the Armadillo Olympics.
Yes, Daddy. Mr. Speaker, my father says...
Now, that makes sense. And will you please ask him whether they really do have Armadillo Olympics?
Well, that was quite an evening.
I had a good time.
You got a tip.
But, Daddy, You always tell me that the key to solving any conflict is to get the parties talking.
Hmm, that's true. I mean, it's true. I always tell you that.
So why couldn't you and Mr. John just talk to each other without, I mean, without...
Without using your daughter and me as the world's smallest diplomatic corps?
Well, Captain, I'm glad you asked me that. You see, in the schoolyard, conflict is personal and spontaneous. It just happens. Mm-hmm. But in my business, there are plenty of people who plan and organize conflict because there are plenty of people who make money off it. On our side and on the other side. Often the same people. So?
So, you're just doing your job?
I think I know one young lady who doesn't have to do homework tonight.
Now that I can't agree with.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Houston, don't you know? A Halloween display inside a Houston Kroger store. That's a food store. Largest food store in the country, I have to explain that to you. Didn't last long after some Houston Texans football fans complained. The display in the store included a tombstone that said, R.I.P. Matt Schaub's arm. Some shoppers were offended by the attack on the injured quarterback. Kroger later apologized for the incident and issued a statement. Kroger would like to express tremendous regret over the derogatory Matt Schaub sign that was displayed at one of our store locations. It was created without the direction and approval from our marketing department. The sign has been removed. See, this is why you need a marketing department, Kroger. Riel Hunter, the woman marred by scandal. Marred? Really? Over her romantic relationship with John Edwards. I think he was marred. More marred. She apologized for the affair in a piece published in the Huffington Post this week. Quote, I'm very sorry for my wrong, selfish behavior. Back in 2006, I did not think about the scope of my actions, how my falling in love with John Edwards and acting on that love could hurt so many people, she wrote. Nutty little fact, her apology comes as her new book is set for release. Isn't that wild how that happens? The new book is a revised edition of one she previously wrote, and which she now says was a mistake. Quote, my publisher came up with the idea of me going through my book and annotating all of my regrets and my mistakes, she wrote. I wonder if her publisher came up with the idea for apologizing in the Huffington Post. That's one smart publisher. Dateline Washington Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel apologized Wednesday to former Army Captain William Swenson for the mishandling of his Medal of Honor nomination 4 years after his heroism in a deadly six-hour battle in Afghanistan. We're sorry, said Hagel, that you and your family had to endure through that, but you did and you handled it right. Swenson received the military's top honor from President Obama at the White House on Tuesday, 2 years after Obama bestowed the Medal of Honor on another participant in the same battle. An ongoing McClatchy, Washington Bureau investigation determined that crucial portions of Meyer's accounts, Meyer is the other recipient, of his accounts of his role in the battle were either untrue, unsubstantiated, or exaggerated. The McClatchy probe challenged accounts by the Marine Corps and the White House of how Meyer helped extract casualties under fire. The McClatchy investigation also revealed that Swenson's Medal of Honor nomination from December 2009 had inexplicably vanished from every military computer system midway through the approval process. I'll say you're sorry. No, you'll say you're sorry. Dateline Manila, Manila Archbishop Luis Antonio Cardinal Tagle, has apologized for the sins committed by the Roman Catholic Church. During the third and last day of the Philippine Conference on New Evangelization, he said the Catholic Church was asking for forgiveness for all its shortcomings. We beg for pardon. We want to say how sorry we are for the sins, the hurts that we've inflicted on Catholics and non-Catholics, he said. His offer of apology earned him applause from the audience. It's an applause line now. We want to ask forgiveness to the poor that have been neglected, the hungry, the thirsty, that we did not see or hear. We ask forgiveness from the women who have been degraded, dehumanized. We ask forgiveness of children who did not experience caring. How come we have not loved them? The priest asked. And nobody answered. The company behind the unfortunately named mascot Fukupi, spelled F-U-K-U-P-P-Y, released an apology for the name slip-up. The winged egg mascot of Fukushima Industries Corporation was supposed to have taken its name from the portmanteau of the company's name and happy. And yet, Fukupi, as it's pronounced in Japanese, has become a joke across social networks. A lot of the media are reporting on our mascot, says the company, which created misunderstanding. The company apologized for the blunder. This time, the name of our corporate character, because of the way it's written, has been regarded as inappropriate or has been misunderstood among English-speaking people. We sincerely apologize for the fact that we've caused misunderstandings and concerns among many people. The company also promises to look into the name, including a rethink of it. The company is a refrigeration and cooling manufacturer, one of the largest in the country. It has nothing to do with TEPCO. Chen Xiaolu, son of Marshal Chen Yi, has made an apology to some of his teachers in Beijing No. 8 Middle School, his alma mater. He was joined by some of his schoolmates who were Red Guards in the Chinese Cultural Revolution. They expressed their remorse for their actions during the movement and apologized for physically attacking their teachers. Chen and the other Red Guards were praised for their apology. Similar cases have emerged occasionally in recent years, reminding China to reflect on the Cultural Revolution. MSNBC, you've heard of them, on Friday apologized for airing a photo of the wrong Representative Foley following the death of former Speaker Tom Foley. The network showed a picture of former Representative Mark Foley. He's a Republican from Florida. The deceased former Speaker was a Democrat from Washington. MSNBC, you'd think, would at least know the difference between Republicans and Democrats. They showed a picture of the living Foley, who is still living, instead of a photo of the late Foley. Touré, a host on MSNBC, issued the apology statement. We want to correct a mistake made on MSNBC last hour. We showed the wrong picture involving the death of Tom Foley. MSNBC regrets the error. That's the journalistic code for we are supposed to be sorry. And Scotty Cameron, a master golfing accessories designer for Titleist, they make golf stuff, apologized this week over using a symbol of Japanese militarism on his new line of products. The firm, which is owned by Fila, a Korean sports apparel company, also offered an apology. Cameron introduced a new limited edition golf bag and other products in August in Japan, featuring the rising sun flag design used by the Imperial Japanese Army during World War II. I guess the swastika wasn't available because of copyright restrictions. I am very sorry to all my fans and all those people whom I may have offended. It's a Mayapology. As it is never my intent to cause negative or incendiary feelings with anything I create, said Cameron. So that's clear. He doesn't want to create incendiary feelings with his golf bags. All right, got it. Titleist caused a stir recently selling golf bags printed with the flag which the Japanese army used during the invasion of East Asia. It is considered offensive by many Asians, including Koreans and Chinese. Cameron, primarily known for his high-quality putters, I said putters, said it's incredible that he failed to fully appreciate the meaning and historical significance of this particular symbol. I sincerely apologize to anyone affected by this breakdown of oversight. Clearly, it was not intentional, and there will be no further distribution of these products. And Wally Wieline, president and CEO of Acushnet, which is owned by Fila and oversees the Titleist brand, also apologized. This was a breakdown of the oversight process. We apologize to anyone who may have been offended by the error, he said. So, may apologies all around, ladies and gentlemen. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Down in New Orleans, they call the rising sun. It's been the ruin of many a poor boy and me. Oh God, I'm one. Mama, she worked for a tailor man. She sold all my new blue jeans, and my daddy was a gambling man in the town of old New Orleans.
Bethlehem cartridge. Is a suitcase or a trunk, and the only time he's ever satisfied is when he's on a drum. Boys, fill up your glasses right to the brim. Let the drinks flow merrily round. We'll drink to the health of a rounder poor boy who rambles from town to town. Now, fellas, don't believe what a bad woman tells you, though her eyes be blue or brown. Unless she's standing on some old scaffold high, then, fellas, they won't let me come down. I've done, and to shun that old house down in New Orleans that they call the Rising Sun. Soon they'll take me back down to New Orleans to face all the crimes that I've done. Then they'll tie me to an old ball and chain until my earthly race is run.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Eddie, did you have trouble getting in here tonight?
No, I just spun in.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, something to look forward to. In November, according to the Japan Times, TEPCO plans to begin the delicate operation of removing spent fuel from reactor number 4 with radiation equivalent to 14,000 times the amount released by the Hiroshima atomic bomb.
It's spent.
Removing its spent fuel, which contains deadly plutonium, is an urgent task. The consequences could be far more severe than any nuclear accident the world has ever seen, says the Japan Times. If a fuel rod is dropped,
how could that ever happen?
Breaks, or becomes entangled while being removed, possible worst-case scenarios include a big explosion.
Never happened.
A meltdown in the pool.
Never happened.
Or a large nuclear fire.
Could happen.
Any of these situations could lead to massive releases of deadly radionuclides into the atmosphere, putting much of Japan and even neighboring countries at serious risk, writes the Japan Times.
They're just sensationalizing. It's like putting a nude girl on page 3.
It's exactly like that. From the Sunday Times of London, speaking of which, a long-awaited deal to build Britain's first nuclear power station in 2 decades is expected to be unveiled this week in an agreement that will secure the UK's energy supply but could lead to price rises.
How could that be?
The Energy Secretary is holding discussions with EDF, France's state-owned nuclear giant, about an agreement to pave the way for two new reactors.
Need your teeth fixed?
No, I'm fine. The French said they would not build these new reactors without subsidies. Isn't that wild?
Well, it's the free market at work.
Yes, it is, which will be added to household energy bills when the plant is operational.
See, that's their mistake. They should be putting them on the bills now, like the Americans.
That's a good point. The number of safety violations at U.S. nuclear power plants varies dramatically from region to region, pointing to inconsistent enforcement in an industry operating mostly beyond its original 40-year licenses.
That's called resilience.
Nuclear Regulatory Commission figures cited in the GAO report show that while in the West there were the fewest reactors, There were the most lower level violations for the first 12 years of this decade, more than 2.5 times the Southeast's ratio per reactor. The Southeast has the most reactors, had the fewest such violations. The AP got this report. Striking violations did not appear to reflect real differences in reactor performance. Instead, the report says the differences suggest regulators interpret rules and guidelines differently depending on what region they're in. Safety critics said this proves enforcement is too arbitrary.
That's why they're critics.
Yeah, that's true. A United Nations panel has said radiation doses that the workers were exposed to in the initial phase of the Fuk disaster may have been underestimated by 20%.
So sue me.
So sue you. Heavy, is that your Japanese name? Heavy rainfall from Typhoon 26 forced TEPCO to abandon protocol to prevent rainwater from overflowing near tanks holding contaminated water at the Fuk No. 1 plant this week. TEPCO skipped newly introduced procedures when it discharged rainwater that was accumulating within the barrier walls. The company said the radiation levels of the rainwater discharged from 9 locations were all within provisional safety standards approved by the Nuclear Regulation Authority late on October 15th.
Wow, just in time.
TEPCO confirmed that radiation levels in groundwater under the crippled Fuk plant are soaring. TEPCO detected 400,000 becquerels per liter of beta-ray emitting substances such as strontium this week in water samples taken from the observation well, according to the Japan Times. The level of becquerels was up 6,500-fold from Wednesday, sampling a day earlier.
They're on the streak.
Decontamination radiation removal work at 6 Fuk prefecture municipalities could take up to 3 years longer to complete than initially planned.
It's worth waiting for.
Japanese Prime Minister Abe has reportedly assured that the issue of the radioactive water leaking from the Fuk plant is under control and measures are being taken to address the problem.
So nothing to see here.
And Japan has launched a line of anti-radiation underwear. The new swimwear has been crafted from a unique biorubber material that claims to protect the wearer from radiation exposure in contaminated waters. It contains micron-sized bubbles, blocks almost 100% of beta rays, according to Yamamoto Corporation, which makes it. A further line of anti-radiation underwear made from a lead-based fabric to prevent the contamination of gamma rays is also in development. They're kind of expensive. $1,070 for the swimwear. The underwear, $825.
Well, that's a bargain.
And the quality of work at Fuk is mediocre because the management asks us to work fast, but the guys aren't experienced enough, says the supervisor of a radioactivity inspection company at Fuk, talking to the Huffington Post. Sometimes they don't even know the names of the tools.
And that's cute. They give the tools names.
It is cute. Clean, safe, too cute to meter, our friend the atom. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen, the biggest threat to the fledgling Afghan army is? According to this week's Washington Post, it's an inability to repair or replace vital equipment once it's broken. That wasn't part of the mission, teaching them how to fix it, right? That's the next mission. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time. over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe and the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.49 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through WWNO.org, Sideshow Network, iTunes, and SoundCloud. And it'd be just like teaching the Afghans to fix their gear. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Adrian Bodnum, Bodders, here at Global Radio in London, for help with today's broadcast. For this broadcast, the playlist of the music heard here on, and a wonderful store. Christmas is coming, after all. Available for you at harryshearer.com. And I'm tweeting at you at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from just off the red carpet in London.